Hello, this is Pete Jones, and you are listening to the Dragons Are Real podcast. Now, there's been a bit of a kerfuffle in the old RPG space at the moment, and people are looking for alternatives to your fantasy RPGs, something a bit different from 5e. And there's been various things bandied around. All of them are worth checking out. There's Old School Essentials, Dungeon Crawl Classics, RuneQuest, Pathfinder 2, Labyrinth Lord, Swords and Wizardry. There's a host of them out there. So I'm going to throw another one into the pot for you to look at, and this is Victory Basic. It's available on itch.io and it's free. It describes itself as a classic dungeon delving game inspired by original and basic edition fantasy wargame rules. And if you look at the character sheets, it looks quite familiar. You've got your class and race, alignment, level, your main attributes, spell and abilities, so it's a possibility that this might be a good fit for you. So let's dive into Victory Basic. As you can see, Victory Basic has gone for the original D&D vibe, and it's calling itself the Complete Rules White Box Edition, so let's take a dive into it. Now, Victory Basic comes in three volumes, just like the old original D&D. Volume 1 is Mortals and Magic. This game is a Creative Commons license, so you are free to use it as you will. There's no heavy licensing. You can mix it, you can redistribute it, and transform it any way you wish. This is what we want in the license, and I recommend anybody that is looking for a new license for their game, Creative Commons is a good one to go for. It's been tried and tested in the courts. It's legally strong, so if it fits what you're putting out, Creative Commons 4 is well worth using. When we look at the table contents, we've got Dungeoneering, Battle, Classes, Fighter Henchmen, Cleric and Wizard Spells. So this uses your traditional 6 attributes, Strength, Dexterity, Constitution, etc. And you assign a plus or minus to each of these attributes. You're not putting a score between 1 and 18, or 3 and 18, whichever it is. You are just interested in the bonus. Depending on the class you pick, that will be your plus 1 in the score. You add plus 0, minus 1, and minus 2 to your other 4 attributes, because the class will give you 2 plus 1 attributes. And this is a Powered by the Apocalypse game, inspired by Dungeon World, but taking it in a slightly different way. So whenever you are attempting to do an ability check, you roll 2d6, add the results together, add your ability or your attribute modifier, and then if you get to 10 or more, you succeed. On a 7 to 9, you succeed, but the referee makes a move against you, and a 6 or less, you fail, and the referee makes a move. If you're not sure what a move is, basically this is how the GM reacts. If you roll a 7 to 9, you do what you do, and the GM gets to do something. The important thing to know about these rules is making a roll always puts you at risk. If you're doing something simple, then there's no need to roll. Melee uses strength, range attacks use dexterity, consult law uses your intelligence, searching a room uses your wisdom, and talking uses your charisma. Besides your ability checks, you also make saving throws. And the referee will tell you when you are required to make a saving throw. And again, it's the same idea. Roll 2d6, add your attribute. On a 10 or more, you avoid the effect. 7 to 9, you suffer a lesser version of the effect. And a 6 or less, you suffer the entire effect in its entirety. If you roll a double 6, it's an automatic success, and a double 1 is an automatic fail. And when you look at the rules, they've clearly taken some ideas from the original game. You have a party caller, they are the one who's nominated to be the sort of the leader of the party, and they are responsible for telling the group decisions to the referee. You should also have a mapper, and that person will draw out the dungeon on your behalf. There are dungeon levels just like they are in the original game, and then we got a couple of pages of some dangers, and it gives you some examples of what you can face in the dungeon, like traps, diseases, puzzles, curses, braziers, bonfires, cages and gibbets, and the list goes on. So it gives you some good ideas of what you're going to face. All rolls in Victory Basic are rounded up, and we've got the traditional time. You've got days, rounds and turns, which are the same in your original D&D games. In general, you have enough torches and lanterns to last the entire adventure. Then we have equipment. You are presumed to have the necessary equipment to use for your class and your abilities. You start with a Dungeoneer's kit. The first time you use your Dungeoneer's kit, you add a +1 to your attribute rolls. And then we've got rules for doors and portals, for treasure, and there are some nice little bits and bobs that have been added in here, which really adds a bit of flavour to it. So for example, under treasure, once per day a halfling may ask the referee, is there any treasure in this chamber, and get a truthful answer. We have experience levels, and the way you level up in Victory Basic is by acquiring gold, not by killing monsters, and this takes you up to 10 levels. Whenever you go up a level, you increase one of your attributes by +1, you increase your hit points and damage, you may recruit new henchmen and learn new spells. At higher levels, you may also establish a temple, stronghold or tower. When it comes to resting and there's no immediate danger around, you can rest for a few moments, regain hit points equal to your maximum roll of your class's damage. If you're a cleric or wizard, you get to reuse one spell, but each time you stop for a rest, the party mapper makes a wandering monster roll, and on a 1, you're going to be interrupted and gain no benefit. If you rest overnight, then you recover all lost hit points, expended spells, and once per day abilities. However, the referee will roll on the dungeon events table to determine how the dungeon has changed. So as you don't get any XP for fighting monsters, then as the rules suggest, avoiding monsters is usually a good tactic because you're after the treasure. And in this game, monsters are particularly dangerous, so you are encouraged to really think what you are doing, whether you need to fight or whether you can use some other tactic to get around these monsters. When it comes to turn, the referee will decide which dungeoneer acts first, and when they have taken their turn, play proceeds to the left or right from that player and continues around the table. The referee doesn't take a turn, they just react, so whenever a dungeoneer makes a roll and rolls a 9 or less, then the GM or referee is going to take a turn. During your turn, you may move somewhere nearby and or attack, cast a spell. Or if you forgo that action or attack, you may move again, so make a double move or a dash, as it would be known in other games. Distances are abstracted, so we've got up close when we're in combat. We've got nearby when you're within a spear's throw of each other, and you've got far away. And you must make 2 movement actions to close the distance with a far away enemy. So when it comes to attacking, you roll your strength in melee or dex in missiles. You add your ability modifier from that attribute to your dice roll, and the 10 or more you deal your damage to the monster or any other effects the weapon might have. A 7 to 9 you deal your damage, but the referee makes a move with the monster. And 6 or less you miss, and the referee makes a move. There are some bonuses to this roll, and it's typically from things like weapons, and they're in the range of a +1 to +3 magical type weapon. If you have an ability that allows you to do multiple attacks, you take all your attacks and resolve them and deal damage before the referee makes a move. As with these typical old school games, whenever damage is dealt, it reduces the hit points of the characters or the monsters. When a monster is reduced to 0 hit points, it dies, and with characters, if they're reduced to 0 hit points, they must make a last breath roll. And the last breath roll is a 2d6 roll. On a 6 or less, you die. On a 7 to 9, one of the attributes is randomly reduced by 1, and 10 or more, they stand up again with half the hit points and may retreat from the imminent danger. When somebody dies, then their treasure passes on to the other party member, unless something happens in the combat where they can't get to it. And When you re-enter the game, you always re-enter with a first level Dungeoneer, not the average, as often happens in other elf type games. So let's have a look at the classes. Each class has the number of hit points, the armor, the damage, and the two attributes that get plus one, and then they have their alignment, what races they can have, what weapons and armor they have, their saving throw, if they got any spell casting, and that's it for all of the classes. So we have a cleric, the armored priests, and this is your typical old school classes, very traditional. So like a cleric will wield a mace, a cudgel or flail, cannot wield missile weapons or magical armor. They get a plus two saving throw versus ongoing conditions. A cleric starts with three first level spells, and each time they gain a level, they get a spell of that level of their choice. They may also learn spells from scrolls, and they roll 2d6 and use their wisdom modifier. On a 10 or more, they cast a spell. On a 7 to 9, they cast a spell, but it is expended. The referee makes a move, and 6 or less, the spell fails, and they lose their spell slot. When they get up to 6th level, they may spend gold to establish a temple. And if a cleric ever gets to 11th level, then they cease adventuring and retires to establish a temple for free if they have not already done so. We also have a fighter, and a fighter can be a human, elf, dwarf or halfling. They get their typical weapons, access to all weapons and magical weapons and armour, but they also have access to henchmen. And the way henchmen works in this is if they've got access to henchmen, they don't travel around the dungeon with them, but they call on them at certain opportunities to help them out. So they turn up and they allow the henchmen to save the day or certainly help them deal with a problem. At 6th level, they establish a stronghold if they have enough money to spend. And they also, like the cleric at 11th level, if they haven't already done so, they cease adventuring and build a stronghold for free. The third class is a wizard. A wizard, they can be human or elf. They get access to spells. They start with 4 first level wizard spells and gain spells in the same way. The spell procedure works exactly the same, but they use their intelligence attribute. They can do rituals, and at 11th level, they can establish a tower. So as I said, the fighters, henchmen, they act in a different way. They can be archers, craftsmen, men-at-arms, there's a long list. And what happens is, at a certain point, they appear, they deal with the problem, and then they merge away again. So for example, a ranger, henchman, they have dug a pit trap or laid a net snare trap ahead of time in the path of a monster that has just advanced or retreated, and the monster will escape at the end of your next turn. So they're like quick get out of jail free cards. The spells are divided into cleric and wizard spells, and you've got your typical old D&D style spells for each level. Things like bless, command, cure, like wounds, and everything is kept to 2 or 3 lines, just like it is in the old books. Volume 2, and this is all in the same PDF, is the Monsters and Treasure. It's got a list of monsters, and monsters have tags which describe the monster, the number appearing, the number of hit dice they have, their armor, their attack, their instinct, and their moves. I don't think I mentioned this, but what armor does in this game is when you take damage, it subtracts off the armor. And we have your regular D&D style monsters in this book, from basilisks to carcass crawlers to cyclops, demons, dragons. The beholders in here, or as it's known in this one, because they can't use the word beholder, is an eye tyrant. And it has 10 plus 4 hit dice, 2 armor, its bite is 1d12 plus 1, and for each of these creatures they have a move. Now the other thing that they do with moves is some creatures have moves with a star by, And if they've got a star, they take a number of moves equal to 1/3 of the PC levels. And if they have 2 stars to the moves, they have half the number of moves available per activation to the PC's levels. So, for example, the Eye Tyrant has a Weakening Ray, a Disintegrating Ray, a Telekinesis Ray, a Confusion Ray, a Terror Ray, and a Mind Control Ray from each of the Eye Stalks. And we've got everything in here you would expect in an old-school game. Things are kept nice and simple. There's a section on how to subdue dragons, commanding demons, and imprisoning liches. There's a list of monsters by hit dice type. There's your ubiquitous Wandering Monsters table. And the hit dice of the monsters encountered depends on the dungeon level. There is a table for what the monster activity is, what it's doing at the time, and it gives you advice on creating different types of monsters, minions, standard monsters, elite monsters, and solo monsters, how to add traits to the monsters, so you can design monsters that aren't already here. But as I said, there is a big list of them already here. Then we move on to the treasure section, and there's different treasure caches. We have minor, major, and hordes, and these are tables which you can roll on and get a variety of things like nothing's found, scrolls, potions, magical armor, that sort of thing. There's further tables for deciding what type of armor is, what type of scroll it is, what type of wand it is, what type of ring it is. There's wondrous items. There is a large amount of treasure that you can add into your game. Cursed items, magical properties of gems. As you can see, there is a lot of work that has gone on to this. And the third and final part of the volume is the Underworld Adventures. So there's a refereeing section, a building the dungeon section, running the dungeon section. So this follows what the referee's agenda is, and it's a lot inspired by the Powered by the Apocalypse games. It's portray a fantastic world, fill the dungeoneers' lives with adventure, play to find out what happens. The principles of refereeing, it holds your hand and tells you how to draw maps, how to think dangerous, offer rewards, create risk. Some great GM advice in here, especially if you haven't played a Powered by the Apocalypse game before. Tells you how to build a dungeon, how to pick levels and the themes, how to conduct the dungeon levels with different ways, the different furnishings you can put in the dungeon and what they can be used for to help or hinder the dungeoneers, how to create adventures with different decisions for the adventurers to come into contact with, how to add rumours and legends, how to place your monsters and the treasure. There's tables here for traps and hazards, to add to the dungeon, diseases, puzzles, the components of a puzzle, how to make it complicated, how to use tricks. There is an awful lot of stuff in here to hold the hand of the referee or dungeon master. When we get onto the running the dungeon section, it says how to start the adventure and how to end the adventure. What sort of moves that you should be making with the monsters or the traps or with the environment. How to use conditions that are created. So for example, a restrained condition will add a -2 to a dex of one of the adventurers. And there's 6 different conditions in here. How to destroy magic items. How to create wandering monsters and how to use them. Lists of different types of areas. So you've got a traditional dungeon with a list of monsters. You've got an occult or hellish dungeon, so that gives you a list of monsters for that. Fungus or a blight dungeon, an iron dungeon, an aquatic or frozen dungeon, an necropolis dungeon. So it gives you some real good ideas if you've got a theme to your dungeon or what the monsters you should be putting in there. It also gives you advice on how to use NPC adventuring parties. How to use surprise and monster reaction tables, which we would all use in the OSR games. How monsters pursue the adventurers. Dungeon events, critical hits and empowered spells, critical fumbles and miscast spells. I've got tables in as well. So all in all, there's 137 pages to this document. It is very well thought out. The closest thing you've got to this in the Powered by the Apocalypse world is Dungeon World, but I would say that this is a better product, especially if you're into the OSR style games. You could easily take one of the OSR modules, and you've got enough information here to run that. You've got your core classes, you've got your core monsters, and it gives you plenty of advice. And considering that this thing is free, actually I'm flabbergasted. It really is a good document, and for no pounds, no dollars, it really is good. This is by someone called Sirs of Victory, and if you go to the itch.io page, they've got another document that I think you should look at as well. It's called Cyclic Dungeon Generation, and this is how I first found Victory Basic. And this is the sort of level creation algorithm used in the roguelike game called Unexplored. And it takes inspiration from Legends of Zelda. So if you're interested in dungeon design, again, this is a free download. It's well worth it. I will leave links to all of these in the show notes. If there's anything else that you want me to cover, then as always, check out the feeds. So if you need to contact me, as always, you can contact me via the dragonsarereal@protonmail.com email address. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, itch.io, all the usual ways. Leave a link in the YouTube comments of the video if you're watching this on YouTube. And if you need any further information, you can check out the blog at dragonsarereal.bearblog.dev/blog/. That's all for today. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you all on the flip side.